From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from the U of I, will be here to discuss last summer's yields and what that meant in the fall, county by county, and who had the highest yields across the nation for both corn and soybeans. Then we'll take up the agricultural energies with Dave Chatterton of the Powerline Group, and we'll close out our time together by looking at the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
So, kind of a quiet day. That's a little unusual. There are some quiet days. They tend to be strung together for a really long time, but we haven't had one for a while. And quiet, I suppose, is all in the eye of the beholder, because even soybeans managed to rally 5.5 cents today.
Yeah, but after yesterday, 5 cents seems like a lot of calm, because there was nothing calm about yesterday. Basically, we saw the funds exiting towards the door yesterday, and there wasn't any buying to support the market, and it just fell out of bed, and we went below a lot of trend lines and down to the point where we found support, and that's what we had today. It was just a little bit of a turn on Tuesday, and the bin doors closed, and farmers weren't selling, and we found a little bounce.
So one of the things that happened in yesterday's trade, that we had rainfall over the weekend, both in the United States in the hard red winter wheat growing regions, especially in those Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma areas. I don't quite remember how widespread it was. And some in the Argentine areas. Do we have an assessment of how much help, if any, the rainfall in Argentina might have done for that soybean crop?
I think there's a portion of the area there that they said it could have stabilized some, but basically the estimates are still staying, down to that 40 to 44 million metric ton level. So basically, there's still, it is not cure all, but it did stabilize in some spots. But all in all, and the out west we got here in the U.S., it helped in some areas, some that way. But along with that, we also watched the sell-off in the wheat yesterday, and we saw the basis at the Gulf drop another 15 cents today. So we had just been artificially high because the world is awash in wheat.
So other things that are happening, when we look forward, the prospective plantings report is due out at the end of this month. That would be next week. What are your expectations? We've seen some really big numbers for the soybean acreage.
Yeah, we have. And I'm afraid that I don't know that the government will go up. If it does, it might be, could be 90.5 to 91 million acres. That's that way. We are hearing talk that we might see a little more cotton planted down south, that could take a few million acres, or, up to 500,000 acres away, and possibly some oats and some stuff around the way that way. So we're seeing a lot of the ranges for corn in the 88.5 and somewhere between 90.5 to 91 million as far as the beans have been going, as far as the acreage, as to what we're looking for the government to say.
Any other final word that we ought to check in on with you before we let you go?
Well, we are seeing the crude oil's been up really good here, and the tensions on the Middle East and Venezuela's output being down. But basically along the way, it's going to be what's going on in the weather, and of course what's going on in the tariffs. What happens that way, and what's announced is retaliation against us.
And we should know more about both the steel and aluminum this week. Those should go on at some point, and we may hear, I suppose, from the Trump administration a bit more about his ideas as it relates to intellectual property and tariffs on some Chinese goods on the import side. And that, I can't imagine, will play out well for soybeans in the United States.
That's the one we hope he sort of forgets about.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, it's National Ag Day. Let's start with Secretary Sonny Perdue, who hopes agricultural commodities don't become the, quote, tip of the retaliation spear in a tit-for-tat trade dispute. He says countries should negotiate exemptions case by case with the Trump administration. Stephanie Ho has more from the United States Department of Agriculture.
Secretary Perdue is concerned about ag products falling victim to retaliation in the wake of President Trump's announced tariffs on steel and aluminum.
We're always concerned over any retaliation type of efforts, and we impressed upon the White House as well as Ambassador Lighthizer and Secretary Ross of the concerns that we have regarding agriculture and farm products being used as the weapons in the any retaliatory measures.
He was speaking to reporters on the sidelines of the National Grain and Feed Association's annual convention in Arizona.
That is the fear and the anxiety is that there will be. That's what retaliation is tit for tat, and retaliation is possible, but it's not up to us how other countries will react.
He pointed to one way countries could negotiate.
I'm hoping that the exemptions the president has issued over the steel and aluminum could be done on a country-by-country basis. I think he has said he's willing to talk to any countries who want to come and make their case.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., despite earlier week rumors to the contrary, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says at last report a fix to the 199A tax provision was not part of the omnibus budget bill. As of last night, Monday night, he says, it didn't include the 199 fix unless something was done after 6:15 p.m. Details of the omnibus bill have not yet been released, but Politico reports that some Senate Democrats won't support the 199A fix unless the omnibus also expands a low-income housing tax credit, something Republican leaders refuse to do. Grassley says he's not giving up on getting the fix included. The 199A provision gives farmers a tax incentive to sell products to co-ops over other types of businesses. And finally today, the heads of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Agriculture Department are scheduled to meet sometime today to winnow down proposals to lower the cost of the nation's biofuels policy to oil refineries. It's unclear whether the list will include a broad range of options already put forth by both sides during recent negotiations hosted by the White House or whether it will provide narrower recommendations. There's been no official word on the winnowing down from either the EPA or the Department of Agriculture. And that is a look at today's Ag News. You do visit our website at willag.org. If you hit on the calendar link there, you'll find that I'll be out of the office tomorrow in Clark County at the Extension Office in Marshall, Illinois. Starting at 11:30 for a Will Ag Marketing Panel, you're invited to come. You probably, if you live in the area, have already received maybe a postcard in the mail. Our panelists for this meeting will include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Sherm Newland with Risk Management Commodities, and Todd Hubbs from the University of Illinois. We kick off with lunch at 11:30, and then around 12:30 or so, we'll start the marketing panel. That's at the Extension office there in Clark County in Marshall, Illinois, starting at 11:30 a.m. tomorrow. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke is here from the FarmDoc Daily team, U of I agricultural economist. Gary, you've written an article about corn and soybean yields. What did you take a look at?
NASS has recently released the county corn and soybean yields, so we mapped those and looked at those and saw where we had very high yields across the United States.
Anything amazing?
So we continue to see a lot of counties with above 200 bushel corn yields, so that is becoming more and more common, particularly in the middle of the Corn Belt. We had a stretch of counties from central Illinois up through Iowa into southern Minnesota that all had over 200 bushels per acre. So that area of over 200 bushel corn yields is continuing and becoming more widespread. It's also interesting, our highest corn yield of the year happened in Warren County, Illinois, 246 bushels per acre, which is just, when you think, sit back and think about it, is a pretty amazing county yield for one county to have.
That is truly amazing that you get that close to 250 corn across the whole of a county. I can't imagine, especially given what we thought the weather was like last year.
Yep, we saw in northwest Illinois, if you look at the U.S. statistics, 8 of our 10 highest yielding corn counties came from northwest Illinois, and most of those had over 220 bushel averages.
Where did the other counties come from?
So there were two other counties that had high corn yields, and those were in Idaho and Washington. So, and both of those more than likely are irrigated. So that those two counties had irrigated yields, whereas the Illinois counties were majority non-irrigated.
What do we know about trend line yields and how these varied off of that trend?
So we calculated a trend for each one of those counties. And given that we had a record-breaking U.S. corn yield, we expected to see most of those counties have above trend yields, and that is what we had. We had considerable areas that had over 35 bushels above trend yields, and those were scattered across the United States. Missouri had some, Illinois had some, Middle South had some, and so did Pennsylvania and along the eastern seaboard. So we had some widespread areas with some pretty good corn yields last year.
Anything that tells you why this happened historically and whether it can continue in the future?
Well, you would expect it to continue in the future because we've seen corn yields increase over time. So, yeah, we're going to see that. It is sort of interesting that it happened last year, particularly in the Corn Belt, where we thought we had some not all that conducive weather, but weather must have been good, particularly in that northwest corner of Illinois.
And I make note that those numbers, 35 bushels above trend, sounds more like a number you would hear below trend than above trend.
Yeah, and Warren County in particular had a 40 bushel above trend yield for 2017. So the last 2 years in many counties had significantly above trend, and they stand out. Those two years in Warren County were well above trend, and we've never seen anything like that since 1972. And as you mentioned, Todd, those yields are more associated with below trend yields.
How'd soybeans do? Were they as exceptional?
Soybeans were not quite as good as corn because we had a little bit lower U.S. corn yield last year, or U.S. soybean yield last year compared to 2016, but they were overall very good. Again, using sort of 60 bushels as a benchmark, we had many counties in the U.S. with over 60 bushel soybean yields, and there was an area in central Illinois that had those. We also saw over 60 bushels in a large area in Nebraska, in the lower Mississippi, along the lower Mississippi River. So those several areas had over 60 bushel soybean yields. And our highest yields actually happened in two counties in Kansas. And those were over 70 bushel yields in those two counties in Kansas.
Who would have thought that would have been the case? Even 2 years ago, I don't think you could have considered that to be a possibility.
Yep, so we've had county averages of over 70 bushels in Seward County, Kansas, and Meade County, Kansas. So two counties there had over 70 bushel yields.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist. You can read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website. It's time now to check the agricultural energy markets. Dave Chatterton from the Powerline Group from right here in Champaign County now joins us. Hey, Dave, thanks for being with us. Tell me broadly in the energy sector what you see at this time.
Hey, Todd, thanks for having us. You know, it's actually been kind of a quiet March compared to the last time we spoke here earlier in February. I mean, crude oil for the month so far has had a range inside of $4 per barrel. We've seen the range in heating oil stay inside of 10 cents here so far. So a lot of competing things going on, you know, bigger supply in the U.S., record crude oil production domestically, still a good export flow compared with what's going on in OPEC, and they continue to cut back supplies. More so by luck than by design, but it continues to present a much more of a feel of the U.S. market versus the world market and where we fit into those things. So we've had some nice retracement in the values here and looking at where we've gone It's somewhat rare for this, I guess we'll call this springtime kind of stability to hold going forward in the year. The fundamentals of the market have improved a little bit, but generally we see fuel prices at levels where you should have at least some coverage on going into particularly spring, if not even for fall, and on your diesel fuel and your propane and your energy needs.
Now, tell me a bit about diesel, because farmers will need to have some inputs available.
Yeah, diesel, I mean, if you go back and look a little bit in time here, I mean, prices really started rallying last June, and they rallied all the way up through the end of January this year. And over that period, if you want to call it that, we went from in a futures pricing environment from about $1.35 a gallon all the way up to $2.15 a gallon. And then we came back. We've dropped off about 30% since that point. We're currently trading around 195 in the lead month futures, but that low came in at around 181, 182. And so basically, I think, you know, you want to do your spring pricing between here or be buying on these breaks or be doing your spring pricing between those two levels, between that 95 and 85 type, if you want to reference lead month futures here.
You mentioned another fuel that producers use oftentimes, mostly for drying, I think, but for equipment as well on occasion. That would be propane. What's your assessment?
Yeah, same thing on propane. We've seen at least a nice little turnaround in the fundamentals there. The inventories have improved from where we were earlier in the year. Exports have slowed down just enough. The weather has broken just enough that we're finally kind of back on pace. And prices there, I mean, the same thing. We had the kind of that June to January rally in the Midwest where prices went from, let's say, 55 cents on a wholesale level all the way up to about 95 cents. Earlier this month, we actually dipped down below 60 cents. So we almost retraced that entire pricing move from last winter. And we're currently, let's say, at around 65 cents or about a nickel, 6 cents above that recent low. I think it's going to be hard for us to push much lower below that mark. So again, any softness in here, I think you want to extend your coverage, particularly if you're talking about, you know, equipment needs or spring or summer irrigation. If you go into the fall, you don't have to have as heavy a coverage, but, you know, you still want to be thinking about it. I think it's a good idea to at least have something on the books out there.
And finally, turn your attention to ethanol as it's produced from corn primarily. What kind of margins are the ethanol production facilities working at this point?
Well, considering that we've got record ethanol stocks, the margins have actually held up okay. They're not great. They're not stellar, but they are adequate. They're keeping, obviously, the production numbers up, and we're keeping our corn demand going forward. Behind that, we've seen just a little stumble here of late, but those margins continue to be, you know, depending on whether you're talking about plants that produce with corn oil or plants that, you know, do, you know, capture other byproducts and different things. But the numbers have been positive in the core of the Midwest, and we look at that as a positive thing, and certainly don't expect those to blow out to the upside here anytime soon. But at least we're getting by here. We're on pace to meet the USDA productions here, or USDA estimates, excuse me, here.
Hey, thanks so much, Dave. We'll talk with you again in a month.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with the Powerline Group. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this 20th day of March. It's a Tuesday afternoon, and Don Day is now here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. How's the weather out where you are?
Well, it's the first day of spring, and it's acting that way. We've had rain, we've had snow, we've had thunder, we've had warm days, we've had cold days. I guess it's just that time of year.
In fact, it is that time of year. So why don't you take me across the whole of the United States and the places that you find of most interest and that are agriculturally important?
Well, we'll go west to east. California is about ready to see some significant rains, probably too much of a good thing in some areas, but California Central Valley and the snowpack areas of the Sierras are going to get a really beneficial boost of moisture. As you go further east, we're still looking at very dry conditions in the southern plains. We did see a little bit of rain in wheat country late last week and over the weekend, especially in some areas of Colorado, some areas of Kansas and Nebraska, but New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma still suffering from dryness. Then we've got another storm that will be bringing more snow to the northern part of the Mid-Atlantic and some of the northeast United States in the coming days. Now, as these systems go west to east across the U.S., while they are missing some of the southern plains areas, we are going to have some wet weather here over the next couple of weeks in the lower delta across most of the Corn Belt. I do see some adequate rains coming.
And anything else that we ought to discuss for the afternoon?
Well, one thing we'll need to watch is some severe weather and some heavy rains in the delta areas. We do see the potential for some 5, 6, 7 inch rains in some of the areas down south with this active weather pattern. We're seeing more of a widespread good coverage of rain elsewhere across the Midwest.
Hey, thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'll be traveling tomorrow to the southern part of the state, the Clark County Extension Office there in Marshall, Illinois, in fact, for a Will Ag Marketing panel. That'll start at 11:30 a.m. with a lunch. Hopefully you've gotten an invite in the mail by now, but if not, just go ahead and show up. That's on North State Highway in Marshall, Illinois. I'm sure it's not hard to find. Lunch is at 11:30, and then our kickoff panel will start about 12:30 or immediately following the time that you're all done eating. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, will be there. Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, and Todd Hubbs from the University of Illinois. Again, that's tomorrow. We'll be in Marshall, Illinois at the Clark County Extension Office. Please do drop by and visit with us if you get a chance. The other item is because I'll be in the midst of that Will Ag panel about the time I normally would put together a program for you in the afternoon, the Closing Market Report. I'll be putting that together early, so no numbers tomorrow, but we have a really good interview that I did late last week with the executive director of the U.S. Grains Council. His name is Tom Slate. We talk a lot about exports of grains, corn, even soybeans, though that's not quite in their bailiwick, and what the Trump administration is doing, how the world is reacting, and what it might mean to U.S. Corn and soybean exports over the next several months. So you can check that all out tomorrow right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.